Chapter 1. Working in God's Vineyard. Those who are willing to leave their nets or to cast them on the right side for truth have the opportunity now, as aforetime, to learn and to practice Christian healing. Mary Baker Eddy, 1886 to 1888. The youthful Joseph Mann had experienced a marvelous healing in November of 1886. While target practicing with his brother-in-law, a bullet from a .32 caliber revolver had accidentally struck him in the chest and rendered him immediately unconscious. The family doctor summoned three eminent physicians, and all four pronounced the wound fatal, judging that the ball had probably touched the heart. The body was growing cold, and the family physician had departed when Christian Science, which the Manns had never heard of, knocked at the door of their home in Broadbrook, Connecticut, and restored the young man to life and health. Joseph and several of his brothers and sisters began the study of science and health right away, and the 22-year-old Joseph healed many who appealed to him for help after hearing of his miraculous recovery. His healing work led him to Mrs. Eddy's primary class in the Massachusetts Metaphysical College in the fall of 1888. Soon thereafter, he began practicing Christian Science in Boston, where his sister Pauline joined him. A visit to two of his brothers, Christian and Frederick, in Junction City, Kansas, eventuated in Frederick's moving to Boston, where he too became a Christian Science practitioner and was often courier for Mrs. Eddy in later years. Joseph's visit also introduced another young man in Junction City to Christian Science in a roundabout way. John Salcho was too shy to ask about the copy of Science and Health he saw in the Mann brothers' house, but he quietly sent for a copy of his own. When his initial reading brought an immediate healing, he became a serious student. At a later date, a news reporter described John Salcho as a, quote, big Swede, end quote. But his family was German, upright in character, and bitter towards religion. John very casually left his Science and Health on the parlor table, where it could not be missed. And after 3 weeks, his father, who had read the book clandestinely at first, announced that, quote, he had been a pretty hard old infidel, but he knew this woman had found the truth, end quote. When Joseph Mann came again to Junction City, this time to teach a class in Christian Science, John Salcho and his eldest sister were in attendance. Mrs. Eddy was always interested in such resurrective experiences as that of Joseph Mann, and one day questioned him about it in detail, most especially the regenerative aspect. Then she stated, Joseph, you have had a wonderful experience. You were thrown violently out of the house and picked yourself up on the outside. Go not back into it. In 1898, when young Mr. Mann learned that Mrs. Eddy needed an overseer for her Pleasant View estate, he volunteered his services and was liberally rewarded later that same year by being included in Mrs. Eddy's last class. Another young man came into Christian Science by a very different route. Two of Calvin C. Hill's brothers and two sisters had died of tuberculosis. Symptoms of the disease, together with his fear, induced Calvin in 1890 to give up business in the East and try the high, dry climate of Colorado. 2 years later, a fellow salesman who had been healed by reading Science and Health introduced Mr. Hill to Christian Science, but he rejected it. Refusing much of what his friend had to say for the next 3 years and continuing his material remedies, Calvin found his condition practically unchanged after 5 years in Colorado, except that he was also suffering distressfully from dyspepsia. The medical help he had sought for his latter ailment had failed to relieve him, and in his distress, he decided to give Christian Science a try. He went to Mrs. Frances Mack Mann in Denver and was healed in one treatment. This opened the young man's eyes and his heart to Christian Science, and he began an earnest study of Science and Health. Shortly thereafter, when his science friend and wife were moving to Boston, Mr. Hill decided to do the same. Early in 1895, he was back on the East Coast, employed by a fine firm dealing in carpets and draperies in the city of Boston, where he began attending the Mother Church. He was also earnestly pursuing his study of science and health. But his thought had been poisoned against Mrs. Eddy by the news media. He resented the testimonies wherein grateful appreciation to the leader was expressed, until one evening a student of Mrs. Eddy said, quote, "You can no more separate Mrs. Eddy from Science and Health than you can Moses from the commandments, or Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount." End quote. A second awakening took place. The young man's eyes and his heart were opened wider, and he began earnestly seeking to find Mrs. Eddy in her writings, rather than separating them from her. He also sought out other young Christian scientists for companionship, and in time was living with Joseph Mann and his sister Pauline, before their move to Pleasant View in 1898. One Saturday morning in April 1899, Laura E. Sargent and James A. Neal came in to John H. Prey and Sons Company in Boston, where Mr. Hill was employed, to select samples of floor covering for Pleasant View. After they had left, Mr. Hill felt that something more appropriate could be found for Mrs. Eddy's home, and made a quick trip to New York the next day. The following Tuesday morning found Calvin in a back parlor at Pleasant View, arranging his samples and chatting pleasantly with household members, when Mrs. Eddy came in. Before that day ended, he would have the most wonderful experience of his life up to that point. When he determined that Mrs. Eddy did not like his evasive answers, he gave her a critical appraisal of some of the decorating which led at a later date to his assisting with redecorating. But at the time, Mrs. Eddy's gentle reply was, "You know I do not go shopping very often, so that I do not know much about the styles." Her thoughts were always on the things of the spirit. And after concluding the carpet business, she led Mr. Hill's thought up higher on that Tuesday morning. In her study above the back parlor, they conversed for a while. Then she asked him who his teacher was. "Well, Mrs. Blank, Mother," I replied. "I believe I shall have to call you my teacher. I have been studying your book, Science and Health, and your other writings for the past 4 years. And if what is said to me by one of your own students or by one of your students' students is not backed up or verified by your writings, I take no stock in his statements, none whatever." Mrs. Eddy stepped forward, placed her hand on my shoulder, and patted it gently, saying, "My child, my child, my child, you're safe. You're safe. You're safe." The leader asked Mr. Hill many questions during that first interview and asked him if he had any questions he would like to ask her. She talked as long as he could follow her and quietly closed the interview when she had taken him as far as he could follow. He was lifted beyond his former self and wrote of the occasion. As I left Pleasant View to return to the depot after this memorable and uplifting experience, I felt as if I were walking on air. Nothing seemed real except the truth which Mrs. Eddy had affirmed and which was inscribed on the disk of my consciousness. I boarded the train for Boston, and as I rode along, my thought was completely occupied with the great illumination of the reality of spirit and the nothingness of matter. I felt that I had been lifted to the Mount of Transfiguration. For a number of days, all I could think of, all I could hear, was what Mrs. Eddy had said to me in answer to my question, and the spiritual light which I received during that interview remained with me in all its glory. From that time, I was a different man. A month or so later, when Mr. Hill was visiting Joseph and Pauline Mann in the cottage at Pleasant View, he had the privilege of a second interview with Mrs. Eddy, followed by a second exalting experience. This left him with a deep desire to serve the leader and her cause in every possible way, which began with his making purchases for her and members of her household. Very soon, Calvin Hill became courier for Mrs. Eddy, carrying her messages to her board of directors in Boston. This led to assisting the board, and in time, he had the sole responsibility for finding helpers for the work at Pleasant View. A never-ending task. All the work had to be done by sincere, unselfish Christian scientists. Few were qualified, and fewer still were willing to sacrifice self to Mrs. Eddy's great cause for any length of time. Mrs. Eddy told Calvin to go first to her own students and said, "Get one who loves to work for the cause and is willing to take up the cross for it, as I have done." Many were eager to go to Pleasant View, but very few knew what it was to take up the cross. In prospective workers, Mr. Hill looked for qualities of love, orderliness, promptness, alertness, accuracy, truthfulness, fidelity, consecration, and humility. In one of his interviews with Mrs. Eddy on the subject, he said, "Mother, in looking for helpers for you, I am not trying to find a pleasant personality. I am looking for a quality of thought that reflects the great revelation you have given to the world. Mr. Hill was a good judge of character, but he was amazed at Mrs. Eddy's ability in this area and wrote of it. In her personal interviews with prospective helpers, I have known many cases in which she clearly discerned their thought and character at the first meeting. Mrs. Eddy knew immediately whether or not a person could qualify for membership in her household. There was never any question about it. I learned that she was always right, whatever I myself may have thought about the adaptability of a candidate. As I saw her great intuition and wisdom manifested again and again, I came to the conviction that her judgment was as near perfection as is possible in this world. The leader felt that Pauline Mann had the necessary qualifications and soon invited her to serve in the House. August Mann, another brother, and his wife, Amanda, moved into the cottage with Joseph, and August became Mrs. Eddy's coachman. By the beginning of the century, Joseph, too, had been invited into the house to serve as assistant secretary and metaphysical worker. The lawsuits launched by Josephine Woodbury in August of 1899 had been dragging on for a year and a half and were a great burden for the leader to bear. One suit was against Mrs. Eddy, one against her directors, one against her trustees, and others against other prominent men working for the cause in Boston. Mrs. Eddy wanted each suit handled individually, knowing that that would cause each defendant to work more diligently and give her some much-needed support. They instead, no doubt through fear, wanted to unite all of the actions, feeling a security in numbers, and to let the church bear the burden and the expense, which threw the total burden and responsibility onto Mrs. Eddy's overburdened shoulders. John Salcho in Junction City had an interesting dream about this time, involving Mrs. Eddy and a boat he owned. It seemed he was instructed to get his boat ready because Mrs. Eddy wanted to go out in it. But, dreamlike, his much enlarged boat was filled with people, all vying for positions to see the leader. Dutifully, John was willing merely to serve and went to the stern cabin to handle the rudder, but found his dutifulness rewarded when the door swung open a few inches and gave him a good view of Mrs. Eddy walking toward the boat with a parcel in her hand. It seemed as if the burden of the whole universe was on her shoulders, and as if she would be crushed before she took another step. But still, she came on, her eyes looking upward and beyond the world. It was the most sad and heart-rending sight I had ever seen. When she reached the spot where the man had spoken to me, she caught sight of me through the opening in the door. It seemed then as if the whole scene changed. Her burdens fell away, and she came tripping directly to the door of the cabin. Without noticing anyone else, she handed the parcel to me. It was a copy of Science and Health, with the words, quote, "To our faithful boy," end quote. and then turned and walked away. At a later date, when John Salcho was serving Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View, he felt that his dream had been fulfilled when she presented him with a copy of Science and Health, inscribed to her, quote, "Faithful John," end quote, although he had never told her about his dream. But in January of 1901, quote, "the burden of the whole universe was on her shoulders," end quote, and she often felt, quote, "as if she would be crushed before she took another step," end quote. January 4th was a day in point. A lengthy conference with her lawyers, General Frank S. Streeter and Samuel J. Elder, took place at Pleasant View. Three of her Boston officials were present, two directors, Joseph Armstrong and William B. Johnson, and editor, Judge Septimus J. Hanna. Streeter and Elder were not Christian Scientists, and more than once she had a good deal of difficulty in persuading them to pursue the course God was directing her to take. Prior to now, her students had endeavored to follow her spiritual guidance, but on this day, that was not the case. They sat mute, obviously siding with the lawyers on the issue of bringing the action to New Hampshire rather than keeping it as much as possible in Boston. Mrs. Eddy's talented new student, Judge Clarkson, had been unable to see that Mrs. Eddy was just as God-guided in meeting with the exigencies of a lawsuit as she was in writing Science and Health. Being unable to convince her that it was essential to let the men take the lead without her dictation, he had chemicalized and resigned his post. But his persuasive arguments, which could not move the leader, had greatly affected the men, who were her older students and officials of her Boston organization. They were no help to the leader, and gave her no support, as her lawyers argued at great length. Even though she finally prevailed, and in time, the wisdom of her way was seen and admitted, on that Friday afternoon, she felt very nearly overcome. The next day, January 5th, she wrote to Judge Ewing in Chicago. "Oh, that you had been here. I felt so alone. Judge H., Mr. A., and Mr. J. sat with the lawyers in my room. Hours, the latter cutting my heart out, the former speechless. I felt as if I were in the presence of headsmen waiting to take me to the scaffold. Why, oh why, are the declining years of a life like mine so haunted, hounded, soulless, unpitied? God only knows." When she asked Joseph Mann to recommend someone who would stand, if brought to Pleasant View, to help with the work, he thought immediately of John Salcho in Junction City. A little later, when John received a letter asking him to come to Pleasant View, he dropped everything and was on his way to Concord within 2 hours. Although his work was largely out of doors, maintenance, repair, handyman, etc., John found it easier to stand than did Joseph Mann in the heat of the battle. The first time Mrs. Eddy saw John, she said, "Who is that working in my garden?" Mr. Mann responded, That is the new man you asked me to get for you. Obviously, the leader read John Salcho's character, for she said to Mr. Man, I admire his unspoilable integrity. 6 other students were summoned to Pleasant View in January of 1901. Miss Mary Stewart of Des Moines, Iowa, who had been in Mrs. Eddy's last class in Christian Science Hall in 1898, received a telegram from Mrs. Eddy asking her to come at once. When she arrived in Concord, she found 5 other scientists at Christian Science Hall and learned that they had been summoned to do some preliminary work on the lawsuits in progress against Mrs. Eddy and some of her chosen officials. The 5 students had been interviewed by Mrs. Eddy that afternoon, but having a greater distance to travel, Miss Stewart had arrived a day later. That evening, a messenger came from Mrs. Eddy with an invitation to call on her the next day, and with the message, quote, tell her that her prompt obedience to the call will ensure to her life, health, and heaven, end quote. The interview the next day seemed to Miss Stewart like a foretaste of heaven. Mrs. Eddy talked earnestly about the welfare of the cause and told how error tried to separate some of her older students from her. She emphasized healing and the importance of giving much time and consecration to the work of healing, adding, I cannot help healing. Then, the worst evil is to go to a bed of sickness and say, God is all. God is love. You are not sick. She spoke with scorn of such statements made coldly and superficially, and indicated that sort of practice sometimes amounted to neglect of a case and brought criticism from physicians, saying, if I were a physician, I would have made the same criticisms, and they would have been just. How I decry such practice! Then, with a light in her eyes and filled with the power of spirit, she said, Mother would say, arise and walk. As Mrs. Eddy told Miss Stewart about the malicious efforts of evil against her, relating some of the attempts to break up her household, to break up the ranks, to separate her students from her, her face was illumined with the Christ consciousness. To Mary Stewart, her look and attitude declared her God-given dominion, and the threats of evil seemed so absurd, impudent, and impossible that she laughed aloud. Instantly, Mrs. Eddy said, if you take it that way, perhaps you could stand. Yes, you can. And having done all, stand. Mrs. Eddy directed the work of the 6 students summoned to work specifically for the lawsuit. Mary Stewart recorded, during the time the group of scientists were working together, it was evident that Mrs. Eddy was constantly listening for God's direction. She sent us instructions about how to work, then told us to wait. Then again came definite instructions. Ever did she exemplify her words in miscellaneous writings, quote, with armor on, I continue the march, command and countermand, end quote. One of the instructions Mrs. Eddy sent to this group of workers was as follows. Lawsuit. Woodbury case. God governs it. Justice, truth, and love govern it. And nothing else can or does affect it in the least. I have faith in God. I know that faith as a grain of mustard seed does remove mountains. I have no faith in evil. I know that it cannot do anything. It is nothing. God is all. The wrath of man shall praise him, and the remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain. All things work together for good to them who love the Lord. On the 17th of January, Mrs. Eddy notified her directors that she had commissioned Edward A. Kimball of Chicago, whom she had called to Pleasant View, to represent her in all that pertained to the Woodbury case. Judge Hanna responded to this message on January 19th. I am glad Mr. Kimball is here. We need his fresh, strong thought, and I hope he will remain until it is over. He is not fagged out, as are the rest of us. The working students had already improved the situation in Boston, for Hanna also wrote in his letter, quote, I see also a strong need of greater reliance on the gospel and less on human law for success in the case. End quote. In Ms. Stewart's reminiscence, when that part of the work for which this group had been called was accomplished, she directed us to return to our homes. She wrote, I deeply thank you for your Christlikeness in coming and going at the word. Our Master did just this. I have done it for 30 years. Other students were called to work for the case at a later date, but Mr. Kimball, who came in January, stayed on till the case was over and then continued in Boston for further vital work for the cause.